This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Extra Point with knowledgeable analysts and exclusive special guests. It's your look at the world of sports through the eyes of Place to Be Nation. And now your hosts, Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, George Ribellino.
Place to Be Nation. It is a very festive evening here in our ivory headquarters. Welcome to episode 40. Yes, we've hit the 40 mark of your home for everything sports, Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. I'm your co-host, Scott Criscolo. Very festive day today for many reasons. Number one, of course, as I just mentioned, it is our 40th episode, the Gale Sayers episode, or as my compadre wants to say, the limp-armed Chin Ming Wong episode. But it is also, of course, most importantly, today is the second anniversary of PlaceToBeNation.com. And we'll talk more about the site later. We've got a lot of fun stuff to honor the anniversary today. But here on Extra Point, we got a fun show. It's been a few weeks. We've had, we had Memorial Day and all that kind of stuff. So we were a little later than we normally are. But we got a great show for you tonight. We're going to run the gamut of everything. But before we do that, let me bring in my compadre, who's a little giddy. He's a little giddy because the crown is not quite shiny for he who holds the throne. The Doctor. Dr. G, George Ribellino.
Well, well, well.
Well, 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 you silly bastard.
For number 40, you got your man, Bartolo Colon.
Yeah, that's probably a half his waist size, but he did win his eighth game, which leads the National League in wins on Sunday, the one win of the weekend.
Don't make fun of him.
And we Met fans know he's a fat bastard, but he keeps winning games. So,
well, before we get started, let's a big happy birthday to you.
Who? I don't know who you're talking about. Yes, it is. Thank you very much. And I thank everybody, all my friends on Facebook and all of our listeners on Place to Be Nation. Thank you for all the birthday.
We went and had a nice ice cream sundae at our favorite ice cream place, Saugatuck Sweets in Westport, Connecticut.
Our haunts, our good friend Al G. Actually, it's Al DG, I guess. Thank you, Al. And thank everybody again for the birthday wishes. Besides an awesome surprise party 2 years ago, Dr. G, that was thrown for me. Well, a lot of surprise. That was the first time I ever went to two surprise birthday parties. I was a guest at yours. Remember that? In the middle of that goddamn blizzard?
Yes.
Fucking 65 inches of snow. But Brooklyn doesn't shut down, baby.
That's right.
And then in June, of course, I had a surprise party thrown for me, which was very nice. But also on that day, June 1st, 2013, was the birth of PlaceToBeNation.com. So a very memorable day 2 years ago. And again, you can hop on the site for all sorts of fun stuff. We'll talk more about that later on in the show. We got a lot of crap to go over.
You're going to sing happy anniversary
to you, PlaceToBeNation. Happy anniversary to you, PlaceToBeNation.
2 years. Wow. It feels like it's longer in some ways, you know?
Well, because we've done so much. It seems like a long time, but we've gotten so much great stuff. And Brad Woodling did a fun thing today, and we'll talk more about that after the break. We got a lot to talk about, Dr. G, because the two winter sports have reached their finals, the NBA finals, which we'll talk about in the second segment. We're going to be joined after the break. Finally, he's free tonight. Guy's a busy man and one of my favorite columnists. Grant Hughes from Bleacher Report will join us tonight, and we will preview the 2015 NBA finals between the Eastern Conference champion, Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Western Conference champion, Golden State Warriors. I'm trying to remember, Dr. G. I know for Cleveland, it was the last time LeBron was there, which was 2007, when they were swept by the Spurs. It was the last time the Cavs were in the finals. And I need to look up. I know for a fact that Golden State won the NBA championship all the way back in 1975, 40 years ago. Just like the episode number tonight was the last time the Golden State Warriors were we're NBA champions.
I think it's going to be an exciting series.
I think it will be as well. But I'm trying to think. Were they in the finals in 77? Let me see. No, that was Portland. So that was the last time, 1975. 1975, Al Attles, Rick Barry and his underhanded free throws won the NBA championship in 1975. They beat the was it the Bullets? I want to say it was the Bullets. Yep, it was. They actually swept the Bullets 4-0 in the 1975 NBA Finals. That's the last time Golden State made it.
Well, so like I said, you got two of the best players in basketball going against each other.
Yes, we do.
LeBron comes back home, and you know here he is in the finals again.
This is his fourth consecutive year in the NBA Finals. The last time he was not in the NBA Finals was 2000 and 11, 12. This is fifth straight year in the finals. I'm sorry, fifth straight year in the finals.
Yep, fifth straight.
Yep. 2010 was the last time he was not in it. And if I remember correctly, that was the last time the Los Angeles Lakers were NBA champions. They beat the Celtics in 7 games in 2010. But since then, 2011, his first year in Miami, they lost to Dallas. Then back-to-back years, they were NBA champions. And then in 2014, last year, they lost to San Antonio. Fifth straight year, LeBron James is in the NBA Finals, and he's going for his third in 5 years. But I think he's got a tall order ahead of him. We'll talk more about that with Grant.
He does.
We'll talk more about that with Grant in our next segment. We'll talk about the teams that were not, and we'll talk about the playoffs in general. Two teams in particular I want to talk about that had disappointing ends to their seasons: the Atlanta Hawks and the Los Angeles Clippers. Probably their seasons ended much earlier than they wanted to, and I want to talk to Grant about their future and what things hold for them in those two cities. Of course, this might have been the end of the San Antonio Spurs. Of course, they lost Game 7 in L.A. In the quarterfinals. You and I watched Game 7, Dr. G.
It was a great game.
Yes, it was. We'll talk about the draft. Minnesota with the number one pick. The Lakers have the 2 pick, probably their highest pick in eons, probably since they drafted Worthy in 1982. Probably the last time the Lakers had this good a pick. So we'll talk about all things NBA with Grant Hughes in our second segment. The Stanley Cup Finals begin on Wednesday night in Chicago, I believe. I think they have the home ice. I'm going to double check that. Let me, before I put the cart before the horse or whatever that stupid terminology is. First of all, Dr. G, how are you? Things are good.
Things are really good because, you know what? The Rangers are in the Stanley Cup.
Oh, man. You had to kick dirt that quickly? Wow.
You know what? The raghead fans, they could go on and on and on. Oh, the Devils suck. You know what? It don't matter.
Did you just call them the raghead fans?
Since you beat us in 94, we've won 3 cups. And how many have you won? Zilch.
I am incorrect. The Lightning actually have the home ice. So, of course, the 2015 Stanley Cup Finals, the Eastern Conference champion Tampa Bay Lightning, making their first appearance since 2004 when they were beaten by the they won the Stanley Cup in 2004. They beat the Calgary Flames. And then, of course, the following year we had no Stanley Cup Final because of the strike because Gary Bettman is a tool. Talk about a guy who's – how does that guy still have a job? How many work stoppages have there been in his tenure? Like 4?
It's amazing.
He's such a loser. And the Chicago Blackhawks won the West. Of course, they won Game 7.
They got a tall order ahead of them. I think the Blackhawks are going to take them down. Honestly, I don't think the Rangers could have beat the Blackhawks either. So
I don't either. I said that to my brother, Chris. He wanted to come on tonight, but
You know, I gotta always get on the.
Oh man, you were hopping on. You were trolling. One guy who I never thought would troll anything would be the venerable Dr. G. But wow, you were just like finding.
You know why? Because listen, I'm gonna tell you. I'm gonna say it right here, right now. You don't call someone a king until you win a championship. And I know your brother's got to go on and he won a gold medal. Who cares about the gold medal? I'm not talking about the gold medal. I'm talking about the Stanley Cup. Okay? I got to spell it out. Stanley Cup. He has not won a Stanley Cup. It's just like LeBron James. I hated when people, and you know, we used to talk about this when we've done another show in the past, that you don't call somebody a king until you've won a championship. I had a problem with that with LeBron. LeBron now has won two championships. You could call him king all you want. If Lundqvist would have won the championship this year, I would have been the first one back on that post and said, you know what? Now you could call him king.
You know,
he's not a king. I'm sorry. He is not a king. Let me spell it out for you. He's not a king. Okay?
I can't play Jerry Lawler's
can take your records. Everybody goes, well, what about Dan Marino and his records? You're going to take. I never said that he's not a good player. He is a good player. But he is not a king. A king is a champion. And he is not a champion.
Is Jerry Lawler a king? Well, he did win the
he was AWA World Heavyweight Champion.
But before that, didn't he win the Continental, the CWA Heavyweight title?
Comparing.
Didn't he win that like 166 times?
Yeah, something like that. But anyway, that's my point. And if you all want to fight me on it, fine.
Yeah!
That's fine. But you know what? I'm telling it like it is.
You and Cowboy Senior.
Even there was a Rangers fan that came on, and I can't remember, a friend of ours, I think back from... Yeah, it was a friend of ours back from our Ascent Media days, and he was saying, he goes, yeah, I don't think that, you know, he should be called king yet. Maybe prince, but not a king yet, because he hasn't won anything. So I had a Rangers fan agreeing with me.
You and Cowboy Senior, he wants torches burned in the NFL offices. He wants King Brady to have his feet kissed, and you want Marty Brodeur, and you want... You want Lundqvist to have his feet cut off.
I was maybe doing a little troll. I was trying to compare. Listen, Marty Brodeur had a great career, and he's won three cups. Okay? That's not an easy thing to do. Winning a cup in the NHL is not an easy thing to do, and that's just my point. I think Lundqvist is a good player and probably one of the best goalies in the NHL, but he's not a king. Simple as that.
I think what's worse for, and it's not even Lundqvist's fault, you know what the worst thing is? The Rangers lost game. There were four games at Madison Square Garden in that series. They only won one of them, game one. They lost game two. They lost game seven.
It does take a team to win, and that is true. I'm not saying, and he's had some great playoff wins. There's no doubt about it.
From a team effort,
that moniker or for somebody that hasn't won a championship.
But to lose three games on the road is not good. That's unacceptable, and that's not Lundqvist's fault. He did have a bad game four, but a bad couple games in. He lost game three ugly in Tampa, and then came back, won a great game four, then lost a close game five, then won game six, and then of course shut out by the Bishop. In game seven. But
Bishops overrule kings?
Bishops overrule kings, yeah. But I tell you something, Ben Bishop's going to have a tall order ahead of him because this is one of the deepest and most experienced hockey teams you will ever see. There are only 3, 4, 5, 6 guys on the Chicago Blackhawks roster that have never been to an NBA final, to a Stanley Cup final.
You know, these Western Division teams are big. They're fast. They play a different type of hockey, and it's very hard. You know, it's very hard for these Eastern Division teams to beat these teams, as we've seen in recent years. I mean, your team has had some success, obviously.
Well, the Bruins played a very physical style of hockey that the Vancouver Canucks in 2011 not want to deal with.
The Devils, everybody forgets. Was it 3 years ago? They were
Eastern Conference champions. Yeah, they lost to the Kings. And the Devils used to play a very gritty, aggressive, physical style of hockey that used to put fans and television viewers to sleep. But you know what? It's not about how it looks. It's what the result is.
Exactly.
Now, as I was saying.
But, you know, Ranger fans, Devil fans, and Islander fans, they all hate each other. And I love it. I love the rivalry. I love to have a little fun. I love to get all the Ranger fans going. You know, but that's it. You're done. Move on. You're playing golf with our teams right now.
Kyle Comiskey, Scott Darling, Andrew Desjardins, Joachim Nordstrom, David Rundblad, and Teuvo Teravainen Those are the six guys on the Chicago Blackhawks roster that have never played in the Stanley Cup Finals. Meanwhile, on the other side of the coin, only six guys have played in Stanley Cup Finals on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Brian Boyle, of course, with the Rangers. Matt Carl with the Blackhawks, ironically. Braden Coburn. Vateri Fibula. He's the only one that's been in two. He was with the Red Wings. Brendan Morrow, who I believe was on the Devils, right, in 2000? I think he was on the Devils in 2000, if I remember correctly.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I think Brendan Morrow was on the Devils.
Yep.
And Anton Strahlman. They're the only six guys on the Tampa Bay Lightning roster that have played in a Stanley Cup final. So, I mean, the only thing the Lightning have going for them is they've got home ice. And as you saw in the Eastern Conference Finals, that didn't mean squat, because even winning all those games on the road at the Garden, they still had to go to Game 7 because the Lightning couldn't see.
Yeah, I mean, listen, so, one thing about that Rangers team, they don't die. You know, they may have some off games, or, you know, and like I said, my point is I was getting Ranger fans thinking I was saying that, you know, Lundqvist was like some fly-by-night goalie. He is a great goalie, but he is not the king.
Now, what do you think about this series? Let's stop talking about the Rangers. Nobody cares anymore.
But now this series, the Lightning have a tall order ahead. I mean, they have to come out and win at home in the first couple of games.
Yeah, I think they've got to go to Chicago up 2-0. But they've got the worst
1-1. You're down 2-0, then you might as well just.
Yeah, no. If they lose the first two at home, they're toast. I don't think that's going to happen. But I mean, you've got Duncan Keith, and you got Runblad and Seabrook, and then you got Toews. I always pronounce his name wrong. I don't really care. Let me see if I pronounce his name right. T O E W S, Jonathan Toews. I think it's Toews. Toews. Jonathan Toews. Fantastic player. Obviously, you know, Patrick Kane, Brad Richards. I mean, they just got talent up the wazoo. And of course, between the pipes, they have Corey Crawford. So, I mean, the Lightning got a lot of talent. I mean, a lot of good young Russian players: Namestrikov, Nesterov, Kucherov. I mean, they got a lot of offs, but they got a really talented team.
a lot of offs.
And of course, they have one of the best centers in all of hockey, and Steven Stamkos. So they've got firepower, but I don't know if they've got the physicality that can match the Blackhawks. So. That's going to be a very tough series. The Lightning have to come out and dictate some physicality. They've got to go out there and show that they're not going to get intimidated, that they're going to forecheck, they're going to pick pucks out of the corner, they're not going to get kicked around, and Ben Bishop has to stand tall. If he comes out like you know, they won in two, and I use this example a lot cuz it's my team, but in 2011 what's his name? Why is his name escaping me? Roberto Luongo, the goalie for the Canucks, played great the first two games at home. And then he goes to game three against the Bruins at the Hub and is just rattled, and he's a mess after that. He can't win. And then eventually loses game seven at home. If Ben Bishop comes out and gets rattled and they lose game one like 5-0, that's a telling tale. I think if anything, I think the Lightning have to win game one. I can't see them. I mean, they could win game two, but still, I think the Blackhawks have an immense amount of confidence.
I'm gonna go Blackhawks in five.
I think the Blackhawks win in five as well. I know a few people think they're gonna sweep. I'd like to think that the Lightning will hold serve at home at least once.
They're gonna get a game at home.
I think they may win game two. I have a feeling Chicago's going to come out and win game one. Now, both teams played seven-game series, so they're both teams are tired. Let's see who played longer series. The Lightning went seven with Detroit, six with Montreal, and seven with the Rangers. Chicago went six with Nashville, swept Minnesota, and then beat Anaheim in seven. So the Blackhawks have played less playoff games.
Yeah, you know, no, but, you know, this is the Stanley Cup Finals. This is where you got to throw it all out on the you know.
Yeah. So
all out there and see what happens. And but I just think the Blackhawks are the better team. Not necessarily does the better team always win. No, it's the hottest hot goalie that usually gets. I mean, look at the Kings. I mean, the Kings are pretty much an example of that. They barely make it into the playoffs, and boom, they get hot and
yep,
and they look invincible.
Yep, exactly. So maybe on our next episode, depending if the season, if the series continues or is over, we'll have TJ McLoon.
You just love saying that.
I do like saying his name, TJ McLoon, to go over the hockey season and get you ready for the off season, and or unless the series is still going on, Game 7 or Game 6. Let's talk a little football, and then we'll dive into Major League Baseball because that'll be the meat of our segment. Panthers, of course, cashing in. They're all in on Cam Newton. Sources say that Cam and the Panthers are indeed working on a long-term deal. I think it's for 5 years. Of course, in his second year in the league or third year in the league, he got the Panthers to the playoffs. They beat Arizona in the wild card game. And then they lost to the Seahawks in the divisional playoffs. 7:30 radio, ESPN 7:30 in Charlotte had early reported a deal between Newton and the Panthers was close. Newton was the first pick in 2011. He's in the final year of his rookie deal. Carolina exercised the fifth year option on that deal. Newton is going to make just under $15 million this coming season. The radio station reported that Newton's new deal, based on the current market, is likely to be worth between $20 and $21 million a year.
Wow.
Now, my PIC, who's a master of beating jokes into the ground, always gives me crap that, you know, I said, oh, he's a terrible quarterback. Well, he's not a terrible quarterback, but when he was a rookie, he had leadership and maturity issues. It was well documented in articles that his teammates thought he was a diva, and he had issues at the Pro Bowl that year. He's apparently grown up, and I'm very happy for him. But I wasn't making that up. But now he seems to have settled in Carolina, and last year they made the playoffs, and they won a playoff game. Now, mind you, the Cardinals were on their like ninth string quarterback, but a win's a win. And then they went into Seattle and lost to the defending world champions. And I think Carolina is going to be a very good team in that division. I mean, there's not much left. I mean, Tampa's going to be just starting the Jameis Winston era. The Saints have a lot of holes to fill, as do the Atlanta Falcons. So Carolina could be, Dr. G, a pretty heavy favorite to win that division, that NFC South.
Yeah, I mean,
this coming season,
I agree with you. Newton is really, grown up. He's taken a leadership position on the team, which obviously the quarterback always is. And that's the going rate for a good quarterback these days. So I think that's a good choice by the Panthers. They feel like he's going in the right direction, and you have to be excited. The organization that picking up a playoff win, get that experience, and in a division that's possibly weak, at least a return to the playoffs possibly next season.
Right. So there you go. So Cam Newton obviously getting locked in by the Panthers as their quarterback, and probably the favorite to win that NFC South, but we'll dive more into that in the summertime. Did you hear about your punter? Did you see the story today?
Yeah, Steve Weatherford. He
was okay, probably because he's on roids.
He was, for some reason, because I know he lives in Jersey part of the year, but I guess he went to California where his kid was born in California, in San Diego. He must have a house out there. I'm not really sure the circumstances, but the baby was born, and then he wanted to get back to back to practicing, which he could have taken some time, but he wanted to get back. So he flew cross country to Newark, and then we had this bad weather, and I guess driving back. What is it? He got back.
Well, it says according to
Washington, he had to go to Washington D.C. because they. they couldn't make it into Newark, I believe. Is that?
Well, here's the story. He was driving a rental car after his travel plans were altered, skidded on the Jersey Turnpike at 3:30 in the morning before slamming into a median, setting off the airbags and totaling the vehicle. He sent multiple pictures. You can check them out.
Yeah, no, that I know. But he was originally supposed to be flying right to Newark, but I guess he couldn't make it there. So then he rented a car because he didn't want to be late. He wanted to make it back, so he rented a car, and then that's why. And then
here we go. The 32-year-old Weatherford, whose wife gave birth to a baby girl last week, originally was scheduled to fly from his home in California to New Jersey on Sunday so that he could attend the Giants OTA on Monday. But his flight to Newark was rerouted to Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Because of weather, forcing him to rent a car and drive to New Jersey. OTAs are voluntary, but Weatherford said he felt it was a priority to get back after missing the Giants' 3 OTAs last week. So,
he really had great praise for the state troopers in New Jersey, and he just says he's very blessed. He said he was, I guess, in his like tweet or whatever, he said he's shaking like a leaf, but he's trying to pack his bag for his OTA. I mean, have you ever seen? I'm friends with him on Facebook. You know, liked his page. This guy, I don't think he has an ounce of fat. This guy is ripped like you've never seen anyone before. I mean,
he's a punter.
I mean, he is chiseled. If you're on your computer now and you're on Facebook, just put his name, Steve Weatherford, and you'll see. He is just, I mean, literally doesn't have an ounce of body fat.
And he's only the punter. Why don't they make up something else? He almost
has like Lex Luger's body, if I could, you know, back when, you know, when he was, you know.
No, he doesn't.
Starting out. Not as big, not in terms of as like, you know, the muscle as big, but that, you know, that ripped look where you have the six pack and the whole, you know, I'm telling you.
Why is he only a punter? They should use him as like a wide receiver or something, or, you know.
The guy is like a
tailback
fiend.
Tom Coughlin has no imagination whatsoever. Should use him as a tailback or something, you know, or like a lot of fakes or third down, you know, use him as like a tight end in a slot formation or something. Arizona Cardinals have signed defensive lineman Frosty Rucker to a one-year extension. He earned $1 million last season and was scheduled to make 1.1 this year. He went from being a role player on the Cardinals' defensive line in 2013 to a starter this past season after Darnell Dockett missed the season with an ACL tear. In 15 games, he had 5 sacks, 24 tackles, and 2 forced fumbles. Arizona was the third stop of the 9-year vet. He was drafted in the third round out of USC by the Bengals in 06. He has 188 tackles and 17 sacks in his career. So Arizona trying to keep their defense solid. Obviously, Cardinals have a lot more issues offensively. They were like on their, you know, they went through 3 quarterbacks during last season, but did make the playoffs. But as we mentioned, they lost ugly down in Charlotte to the Carolina Panthers. So that's about it for NFL. Not much else to talk about. Well, obviously the Brady, there's still going to be a hearing on Brady's appeal, but I don't feel like beating that. Go to the sports lounge. Cowboy Senior beat that into the ground. So you can listen to them.
Oh boy, the Patriot haters love this.
Wow. I was talking about it with Cowboy this weekend, Roger Jr., about it. And I said, man, your dad's just got to take the feety pajamas off. And the Cowboy Senior was on vacation. He was giving grief to like a waitress. It was pretty funny. A waitress was giving him guff because she was a Dolphin fan or something. And I think he like powerbombed her or something. I don't know. But no, he didn't do that. He probably wanted to.
Wow.
Nah, I love you, Senior, but get the feety pajamas off, will you? All right, let's check at the how things are in Major League Baseball as we're about at the 2-month mark. And on our next show with Dr. G, we'll bring back your boy Joel Barnhart, see how things are shaking from his perspective in Major League Baseball. Let's go out west. Man, the Houston Astros just keep winning, huh? 4-game lead in the AL West. Evan Gattis still hitting. Altuve, of course, hitting. No big shock there. But how about Evan Gattis, huh? 11 homers. He's only hitting .229, but 11 homers, 31 ribbies.
Well, that's productive.
They keep winning.
When he does hit, they're very productive hits.
They split with the Angels. Was it this past weekend? No, this is a while back. They're coming off losing 2 out of 3 at home to the White Sox. They're playing the Orioles tonight. In fact, Brett Oberholzer.
Hey, it's been a wacky baseball season so far.
Yeah. Brett Oberholzer is coming off the DL tonight, and he's making the start. against the Orioles at the Juice. I mean, they're 11th in runs, so they're not going bonkers. I mean, they're only hitting .237 as a team, so they're still kind of smoke and mirroring it. But I mean, they're staying in first place. But the Angels are breathing down their necks. I mean, they've won 4 in a row. Houston Street doing a hell of a job closing. Mike Trout hitting .295. He's got 12 homers, 27 RBIs, and his RBIs aren't even leading the team. David Freese has 28. But there's another team. They're only hitting .239. Team batting averages are kind of low.
Pitching is definitely in the last two, three seasons is definitely outpacing the hitting. And that's what I'm saying now. You know, I was saying this with Joel is that you get somebody that could hit 25 and 100, they're going to make $25 million a year.
Yep. Texas is making a run. I mean, we thought they were going to be bottom feeders most of the season. They're a game over 500. They've won 3 in a row. Didn't they sweep you guys a few weeks ago or lost 2 out of 3 or something? I don't know. That was the same weekend we lost to. We lost to Pittsburgh, so
it's been a brutal stretch for the Yankees.
Well, we'll get to the Yankees in a couple minutes. Speaking of the Yankees, though, they did lose 3 out of 4 in Oakland, but the A's are bringing up the rear.
The A's were somewhat, you know, coming on a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, before they were playing the Yankees, but you know that's one thing about a long season like this. You're going to have these ebbs and flows of, you know, getting hot and looking like you're the worst team.
But this is ridiculous. Who has the best record in the American League right now? If I asked you that right now, could you answer it correctly?
The Astros.
Wrong. The Minnesota Twins.
Wow.
They're 30-19 right now.
Wow, I didn't realize that myself.
Came out of nowhere. They're a half game ahead of the Royals, and 3.5 ahead of Detroit. I mean, Torrey Hunter's hitting. Brian Dozier's got 9 home runs. I mean, their pitching has been pretty solid. I mean, their ERA slightly under 4. They got a decent whip. It's been okay, but a lot of it is just, you know, timely hitting. I mean, they had their first 20 win month. All right, they were 20-7 in May. First 20-win month.
No, that was just deceiving. Like, I knew that they were having a pretty decent year, but wow,
First time they won 20 games in a month since June of 1991. And we all know what they did, what the Twins did in 1991. They won a world championship. So there you go. Minnesota, Kansas City, Detroit, Cleveland still struggling. And, you know, I was kind of pimping the Indians a lot in our preview special. But, I mean, the pitching has just been horrendous. I mean, Corey Kluber has been dreadful this season. The pitching is just awful. I mean, their team ERA over 2. They have a bad whip. Their team batting average is. I mean, they got a lot of work to do. The Indians, if they want to make a run. I mean, at 24-26, 6.5 games out, and then the White Sox are bringing up the rear. All right, let's talk about this AL East, Dr. G. Your Yankees sitting tied for first. Boy, this division's just ridiculous. One game over 500 between the two of you. The Yankees and Tampa Bay Rays at 26-25.
Well, before the season that this division was going to be, it was going to be tough. And, you know, the Yankees at times, when they look great, they've looked great. When they look bad, I mean, it's like everything. I mean, basically what's kept them alive is the back of the bullpen with Miller and Betances, which there's no better back of a bullpen in baseball. And basically, the power, I guess. But I mean, even that's been tailing off. I mean, I don't know how they've been hanging around. To be honest, I mean, the starters can't get 6 innings from them, let alone. But I don't know. It's the Yankees right now. They got no production from the bottom of the lineup. You can't survive with guys like Drew and Gregorius hitting, you know, 160. I mean, you just can't survive.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the Orioles are struggling. Apparently, from what my PIC's been saying up in Boston, up in you know, further up in New England, Red Sox fans want John Farrell's head. 22-29, they're
That's
dead last.
Ridiculous. Come on.
They're, I mean, minus 48 run differential.
They're getting worse than New York fans. The guy won a championship for you guys a couple of years ago, and you know they. Everybody thought that, you know, and we, and maybe even me included some, because they got Ramirez and they got Sandoval, that they were just handing it over to them, but they didn't do much for their pitching.
Right. Well, their pitching stats, I mean, 4.53 ERA, that's third from the bottom in the American League, only 24 quality starts, a whip of 1.36, they're giving up the opposing batting average of 261. They got rained out tonight, but they were actually playing the Twins.
Let's put it this way, Scott, honestly, there's going to be no wild cards coming out of the East. So basically, this division's up for grabs, and pretty much any of the teams in the division could win this. Can win this thing.
Right. Well, Gordon Eads, who's a columnist on ESPN, says, given John Farrell's message to his veterans Sunday morning failed to produce the desired results, Red Sox falling in galling fashion yet again, it might be useful to issue a new reminder of how ill-tempered the citizenry here can become. Folks around here, having endured the harshest of winters, are in no mood to have their summer spoiled too by a baseball team currently dedicated to the proposition that there are no limits to how badly it can underperform. The Red Sox enter June only four games out of first in the AL East, a standing that says nothing of how poorly they played, an AL worst run differential of minus 48, but wow, speaks volumes about the company they're keeping. The Yankees, who are tied with Tampa for the division lead at just a game over 500, just got through losing 3-4 to Oakland, the only team in the league with a worse record than the Red Sox. The Baltimore Orioles and Blue Jays, like the Sox, have lost more games than they've won. No team in the division has a winning record over the past 10 games. Wow, talk about a meat grinder, huh? And this isn't the AL East 10 years ago. You had all the roided up studs. No, they're not roided up. But you had all the beasts in the AL East, and I mean, now it's just a meat grinder.
Yeah, it's...
The game. So anyway, they got rained out tonight at Fenway against the Twins. They'll play one game tomorrow and then a day-night split admission doubleheader at Fenway Park on set. And guess what? By the way, I saw my PIC's dad, Gazzo, this weekend, and I told him, you got to tell me, because I love hearing you say it. What do you think of Fenway? And what do you think he said? It's still a dump. So
still a dump. I love it.
There you go. He says hi, by the way, Gazzo. So yeah, yes, they did win a world championship 2 years ago, but, yeah, there's a lot of issues on this team, and, we'll see what happens in another month. I mean, Ramirez in the outfield has kind of been a mess.
I'm getting psyched up here. I know I'm kind of doing you and going totally off the beaten path here, but I'm very excited about the Stone Cold interview with Paul.
What do you think? You're on Main Event?
I'm just telling you right now. I'm just being...
Well, because, and I said this to you last night, it's Paul Heyman being interviewed by the first Paul Heyman guy. Which means, Dr. G, you're a Paul Heyman guy. And you didn't even know it, did you? He's your guy. Stone Cold's your guy.
Are you becoming a wrestling snob again?
So you are... No. You're a Paul Heyman guy. Because... Stone Cold is Paul Heyman. Was the first Paul Heyman guy, 1991, right before the creation of the unbelievably awesome Dangerous Alliance. Paul Heyman said Steve Austin is the future of, is wrestling's future, and at that time in 1991, words could not have been more truly spoken.
You know how sad this is? I got so bored by the AL East that I had to start talking about wrestling.
Starting to get like me now. Well, let's move on to the National League. Where the records are a little better. The best record in baseball is still those piece of shit Cardinals. They are 33-17. They're six games ahead of the Cubs. They're continuing to play awesome. Their pitching's great. Their hitting's great. Blah, 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 blah. The Nationals and Mets are in a dogfight with the Braves only three out. I was kind of pissed off the Mets lost two out of three this weekend at home to the Marlins because the Marlins suck. But the Mets are sitting half games.
That team. It don't matter how good or how bad you are.
Well, in April, the pitching staff kind of shut down Giancarlo Stanton finally. But instead, this weekend his back got hot and he hit a few home runs. But they're only a half game out, so I can't totally bitch too bad about the Mets. Even limping through with all these injuries, they're only a half game out of first place.
You know what? We're New York fans, and we're going
to
bitch.
Well, the Nationals have issues. Doug Fister's on the DL, and they just had to put, earlier in the week, they had to put Jason Worth on the DL. So the Nationals aren't perfect right now. And the Cardinals are just cruising in the Central. They're six games ahead of the Cubs. In the West, still a dogfight. And let me tell you something. Kudos. This guy, unheralded, even though he's got, and yes, I know he has three championships in this decade, but I think a guy that still does not get the respect he deserves is Bruce Bochy. The Giants were like roadkill. They were like a possum hit by a bus about a month ago. And now look at them. They're only a half game behind the Dodgers in the NL West. They're above 500 on the road. They're a great road team.
He's reaching touring territory right now.
Yeah.
Or he pretty much is, but
I mean, but they're a great road team. They win games on the road. Bud Black's Padres have fizzled out a little bit. They're two games under 500. By the way, you know, everybody talks about Troy Tulowitzki, and Tulo's a great player, but did you realize he's got, this season, he's got three walks and like 33 strikeouts?
Oof.
The last thing the Mets need is another guy that strikes out a lot. Strike out. Their lineup strikes out enough, believe me.
I don't think the Mets should go after Tulowitzki. I don't think the rewards outweigh the risk.
Yeah, I agree. But I think the Mets are going to have to think of something at some point, because I think they need a bat. So I don't know. We'll have to see. But we'll keep tabs on.
You want a little birthday bat?
I would like a bat. I would like a bat.
Would it be nice, like, if you heard right now over the wire? You know.
But
the Mets get
Mike Trout as the Angels
Scott Cristolo's birthday.
As the Angels,
little Mets pennant.
The Angels went bankrupt, so they had to contract, and Mike Trout signs for 15 years and $6. Oh, that's fantastic. No,
the Mets still wouldn't pay it.
I don't think. Let's see, between both Wilpon father and son, they probably got $250 in their pocket. A couple of fucking assholes. All right, so we'll keep it here to the Extra Point for continued baseball discussions, and of course on our next show we'll bring back Joel Barnhart and we'll talk about
Can't wait to talk to Joel.
Comings and goings. So your first place teams right now. In the East, Yankees and Rays are tied. Minnesota leading the Central, and the Houston Astros leading the West. So what a three teams that were probably projected to finish last in their divisions. The Rays, the Twins, and the Astros all in first place right now in the American League. And in the National League, the Nationals lead the Mets by a half game in the East. The Cardinals are still cruising comfortably ahead of the Pirates or the Cubs in the Central. And right now, a dogfight between those two old bitter rivals, the Dodgers and the Giants. Right now, the Dodgers have a half-game lead. It's almost like the Don Mattingly execution walk. It's the flagged trophy or bust, which is unfortunate, but that's how things are in L.A. So, I highly recommend, by the way, let's get to boxing quickly. If you have HBO Go or HBO Now, depending whether you have the HBO channel or not, go to the on-demand, go to HBO Go. And go to the sports section. The Canelo-Kirkland fight is on there. And this was like a few weeks ago. There was more punches landed in three rounds of that fight than there were in 12 rounds of Mayweather-Pacquiao. As a matter of fact, Dr. G, a few nights ago, I couldn't sleep. I was restless. The rain was hitting the windows. There was some light. There was some thunder. So I couldn't really get to sleep. I need something to help me sleep. So I went to my HBO Go, and I put on the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. And by the second round, I was out.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Oh, you're being nice.
Cure for insomnia. Put on the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. Why don't we take a break here on The Extra Point? When we return, we will be joined by Grant Hughes from BleacherReport.com. We will preview the 2015 NBA Finals. We'll talk about the playoffs in general, teams whose seasons ended disappointingly, and maybe get you ready for the NBA draft. Grant Hughes, Bleacher Report, Hoops, coming up next.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Blaze TV Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and BlazeTVNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, the Blaze TV podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlaceTVNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Chad, do you want your wrestling podcast to be informed by historical and analytical insight and by obsessive watching of footage from any era and any promotion and for them all to be available on one feed?
Sure do, Parv.
Chad, are you ready to shill?
I am, because I know you're talking about the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network.
Let's go through that again. PWOPTBN podcast network.
Got it. That's where you can listen to all sorts of different shows covering the history of pro wrestling in detail.
Shows like Titans of Wrestling with my boys Pete, the man of a 10,000 discs, and Kelly, the jobber lover.
I'm a jobber lover.
The Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham.
Join me, Stephen Graham.
The smash hit wrestling game show Brainbuster with
Johnny Sorrow.
We have a host of top contributors like wrestling historian Chris Zellner.
Hello, everyone. This is Chris Zellner here, starting a new podcast venture.
And the Pro Wrestling Only admins, the man who knows more about 90s wrestling than maybe anybody on earth, Charles, and good old Will from Texas.
This is Will, and I'm joined today by my good buddy Charles.
Whether it's the territories, WWF, NWA, Mid-South, Texas, Portland, tag team wrestling, Japanese wrestling, lucha, old school, new school, we got it.
And of course, the feed still has the mothership itself,
where the big boys play,
on which we continue our endless journey through WCW Supercards.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. It's pro wrestling only.
You know you want to hear it.
Welcome back, Blaze TV Nation, to episode 40 of The Extra Point. Scott Criscolo, Dr. G. Jordan Bellino. BlazeTVNation.com, second anniversary today. Mentioned it often. June 1st, 2013, we launched, and today, along with my birthday, and Brad Woodling did plan it that way, or we all did, so I was kind of touched. So today, Brad Woodling posted, celebrating our second anniversary, looking at some of our more memorable pieces from wrestling, sports, music, all sorts of stuff. So check it out. The Best of PTBN, celebrating our second anniversary. Glenn Butler, The Ballad of the Erstwhile Main Eventer. Story about Daniel Bryan. Our PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. Mr. Reich and Mr. Murray do their 2015 Finals preview. We're about to do one ourselves. We'll get to that in a minute. Will, Dylan Hales, Zellner, Sorrow, Phil Schneider sat back last night and recapped last night's Elimination Chamber show. Quickly, Dr. G, did you like it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
It was a fun show. I liked it a lot, actually. Of course, the big upset, I almost said Grant Owens. Grant Owens isn't a wrestler. Kevin Owens upset John Cena last night. So, Kings of Sport, their newest episode, Destillation Cancellation. So Nate and Marcus talking sports. So the Kings of Sport, new episode for them. And we did a special Place Be podcast. My PIC and I, Friday night, we finished off our all-time pay-per-view cards with November and December. So check that out as well. So check it out, placebenation.com. It's its second birthday today. Your home for everything pop culture. All right, time to talk hardwood. We talked about one spring sport having their finals as Wednesday night in Tampa, the Lightning and the Blackhawks will begin the Stanley Cup Finals. But another series starts the next night out in Oakland, and that is the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers will meet in the NBA Finals. So joining us, he's got a night off, so I'm making him work. Aren't I a jerk? You can catch all of his awesome stuff at BleacherReport.com, NBA writer Grant Hughes. Grant, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back, guys. How's it going?
Good. Sorry to make you work, but but you're awesome. So you got a couple more days off before Thursday. So no.
Yeah, I was getting bored.
You got some great stuff on the site. We'll talk more about what you've got up on Bleacher Report today. Before we talk about the finals itself, give me a couple of observations top to bottom of the playoffs in general. And then I got two teams I want to talk about specifically and what their futures hold after their playoff exits. But just a couple of observations in general on the playoffs this year.
I think the first one to me is and this is a trend that has kind of been developing over a handful of years lately, is that offensively, if you're not a three-point shooting team, you may as well just not show up. And the numbers are backing it up, and just watching the games, you can see this, especially in these playoffs. So the Cavs and the Warriors are the two teams in the finals, and they've devoted a larger percentage of their offense to three-point shooting than any of the other teams that made the postseason. And when we had the conference finalists, there were four teams, and those teams were the top four in percentage of offense devoted to three-point shots, meaning like per possession, they shot the most threes. Mm-hmm. So that's just where the league is now, and that's not going away. And that's only going to get, it's a copycat league. So the teams that aren't shooting a lot of threes, like Memphis, for example, and the Bulls even, they're going to have to step up and do that. So that's one thing. And the other is just the difference in quality in the conferences, which every time we've talked, we've touched on that. The West is ridiculous, and maybe the second best team, the Spurs, got knocked out in the first round. And the East, the Cavs just haven't really been challenged yet. That speaks to them being good, but it speaks to the East being weak. So those are the two things to me that have really stood out.
Mm. Now, are you shocked that the Cavs are in the finals, or did you pretty much think, with them getting LeBron this year, that they were going to be in the finals in the East this year?
Yeah, well, that's really it, right? Like, if they have LeBron, you're not allowed to be shocked. That's just kind of how it works. But I will say, I picked the Hawks to win the conference finals. I picked them to win. They got swept. They got smoked. And so maybe I'm not the best person to ask, but I just thought that, Kevin Love being out, Kyrie Irving being hurt, I thought, the Cavs just kind of ran out of bodies. But they had the one that mattered. They had LeBron. And so, because of him, they are where they are, and really anything's possible. You can't be surprised if they, just keep winning as long as they have him. He's that good.
Yeah, I have to be honest with you. Going into the season, I knew that obviously the Cavs were going to be a much better team, but I thought maybe it was going to take another year before LeBron would make the finals. So for me personally, I'm a little shocked, but I mean, like you said, I guess with LeBron, anything's possible. He's got a tall task ahead of him, though.
Well, we'll break down the series in a minute. There's three. I want to talk about three teams in particular that had what many would consider disappointing ends to their season. First off, the defending world champion San Antonio Spurs knocked out Game 7 in the quarters in a great basketball game. Certainly better than the fight later that night. But I mean, I said it to my brother, who's a big Spurs fan, and some other people. I mean, they do remind me a lot of the New Jersey Devils in the 2000s. Like, oh, this team's just getting older. They're not going to keep winning, and they did. This year, I think they hit the wall. Now money's going to be an issue, keeping guys, paying guys. Kawhi Leonard, I think, is a free agent, right? Or maybe he's in the last year of his deal.
That's right. He's going to be a restricted.
He's going to be a restricted free agent. What's the future hold for the Spurs? Pretty much the team of the generation, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's tough to say just because a lot of what you're saying is right. I mean, they did get older. You know, the real thing, the issue for them this year was Parker was not himself. He was banged up, especially in the playoffs. And they just, you know, as much as they're a system team, they need him to sort of get the system running. And Manu Ginobili, you know, fell off a little bit, just another little bit. And those guys are getting up there, and Parker's got a lot of miles on him. So, you know, it's risky. So their two options to me basically are run it back and hope you get a little luckier with health and trust that, you know, worst case scenario, you're going to be a playoff team. You know, they still Tim Duncan is still a great player, which is crazy to say because you could have said that 15 years ago and it would have been true. So they can do that or, you know, they got to pay Leonard a bunch of money. And maybe they go younger. They can, I think Duncan's coming back, which sort of makes the going young and starting over less of an option. But if they wanted to, they could really kind of strip this thing down and maybe go after Marc Gasol or somebody or LaMarcus Aldridge or somebody like that and kind of, you know, rebuild the core. But those are your two plays. And to me, I hate to break it up. I want to see if they can just give it one more shot. And keep this team together and sort of lean a little more on Kawhi Leonard next year because I think he is a star. So those are your two ways to go, but I hope they keep it together.
Another team whose season ended a little earlier than they probably thought was the team that I just mentioned that knocked out the Spurs, and that was the Los Angeles Clippers. I thought after watching, I think it was game three in LA when they absolutely torched the Rockets by like 30. And it would look like there was some sniping on the Rockets bench, and I thought the Clippers had him in the palm of their hands. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, James Harden and the Rockets are going to the Western Conference Finals. You're Doc Rivers, another Game 7 gacked. What's the future for this team? I mean, this was a year for them. I don't know if this. I mean, rumors about Blake Griffin being traded. What do you see in the future for the Clippers?
I mean, I see pretty limited options, honestly. Their salary cap situation is such that they do not have like really obvious, easy avenues to improvement. I mean, they're just capped out. They're going to have the mini mid-level exception and veterans minimums to spend this summer. And the reason they gave that series up, which, by the way, we're going to look back on them losing that series to the Rockets as like one of the most historically improbable series losses we've ever seen.
Right.
It took one ridiculous quarter from Josh Smith drilling threes and Corey Brewer running all over the place for them to lose that series. If you play that series 100 times, I think the Clippers win it 95 times.
But, I think so, too. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's tough. Like, so the thing people are talking about now is maybe the Clippers swap in a sign and trade DeAndre Jordan for Tyson Chandler. And to me, I don't know why you do that. I mean, you're going to have to pay Jordan a max, and you probably got to do that because you can't replace him on the open market just because the way the salary cap works, you can pay a bunch more to keep your own guys. You can't go out and get other guys when you're where the Clippers are. So they got to kind of, like I said, with the Spurs, the Clippers have to run it back. And they have to hope they get lucky with some minimum salary guys because they need a bench and they don't have one. But you know, they're very good. They just need to get lucky, I think, with some signings.
Do they trade Blake Griffin?
I don't think they can. I mean, I don't think they can for equal value. And to me, you know, the thing I was harping on when their season ended, you know, immediately was that the problem is the bench. The core is awesome. Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre. I mean, it's hard to find a better top three guys. And it was hard to, if you look at the numbers, it's hard to ask those guys to play better than they did. Griffin was amazing. I mean, he had a couple fourth quarter issues, but maybe that's because he's doing everything because the bench sucks. And maybe that's because he's playing 40 some odd minutes. I mean, that's not where I look, you know, to change this roster. I look on the margins. That's the smart way to go to me.
Mm-hmm. And the last team is a team who definitely thought their season ended way too early, is the Atlanta Hawks, who lose ugly, very ugly, in the Eastern Conference Finals, swept by the Cavs. And our man Chad Campbell here on our site, big lives in Georgia, big fan of all the Atlanta teams, just thought that by game four they pretty much cashed in. What's the future hold for this team? I mean, they were a big team chemistry concept all season, but maybe that one go-to guy that they didn't have in the conference finals came back to bite them in the ass. Talk about the offseason for the Hawks. What's their crystal ball look like?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the the most obvious thing to zero in on with them is that, well, they were a system team and that worked until they needed someone to really create shots and kind of be a star when they ran into a series where they sort of got figured out and they were defended well. And they didn't have that guy. And the problem is Atlanta has just never attracted big name free agents. It just doesn't happen.
Right.
So, you know, if you've got to pick a way to go for them, you know, if anything, they're a team that sort of trusts the process with air quotes around it. You know, that's a big buzz phrase, and you don't get, you know, bent out of shape about a bad result if you think the process is sound. Mm-hmm. And I think because they kind of count on continuity so much and chemistry and all that stuff, and because it's going to be so hard for them to go get a big name that maybe they do need, I just don't think they're going to look very different next year. I think they got to worry about paying Damari Carroll. He's a free agent. They got to pay Paul Millsap. He's a free agent. They got to hope Kyle Korver gets healthy. To me, I look at Jeff Teague, their point guard. He just wasn't steady enough. He wasn't aggressive enough in that conference final series. Maybe you give some of his minutes to somebody else. I don't know. There's no easy route there. If they can get a star, they ought to do it. They've chased Dwight Howard before. They chased Chris Paul when he was a free agent, so they'll try. But their track record just isn't great of landing those big names.
Mm. All right. Let's talk about this series. LeBron is close to getting Kobe problems, I think, in terms of his body. I mean, the guy's a physical specimen. But, you know, he started young in his career like Kobe did. He slows down a little bit. I mean, he's having big games. He's had big games in this playoffs, but he's not a one-man wrecking crew like he pretty much was early on in Miami. As good as Kyrie Irving he is banged up. But overall, this Cavs team is not the Miami Heat of 2013 and 2014. Or 2012 and 2013, I should say. Golden State, meanwhile, has guys that could shoot from the parking lot. Thompson and obviously Steph. Break it down. We'll start off Cavs on offense versus Warriors on defense. What do you see?
Well, the Cavs offense quietly in the playoffs and especially against Atlanta basically devolved into LeBron James by himself out at the top trying to beat a guy to either score or create shots. I mean, to even call that an offense is kind of a pretty liberal use of the term. and it really is it. I mean, it's crazy how much they isolated LeBron. But I mean, really, without Kyrie, you know, they don't have a lot of other guys that, you know, and they don't run a system to speak of because LeBron doesn't really like to play that way, it turns out. But so if you're the Warriors, I mean, your job is simple, but also ridiculously tough because, you know, you just have to stop LeBron, but nobody stops LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Warriors, though, unlike the teams that Cleveland has faced at this point, have a zillion guys like long rangy, capable, good defenders to just throw at LeBron and hope he continues to wear down. I mean, that's the game plan is you use Klay Thompson, you use Harrison Barnes, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, even Sean Livingston, and you just make it hard for him, and that's it. And if they force LeBron to shoot some jumpers, and he bites and he keeps shooting jumpers, I think that's the way you take Cleveland out of its offense. If you let him get in the middle and kick the ball out to shooters, it's going to be tough. But ultimately, you just hope you make everything really hard for him. And the Warriors, I think, are the absolute best suited team to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's flip the switch. Golden State obviously relies a lot on outside shooting. Can the Cavs defense handle that? Do they have the horses up top? Can they afford to have LeBron run around the perimeter and cover guys shooting at the elbows? What do you see there on that side of the court?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think they have the personnel. I think you're right. I think you will see LeBron, you know, put on just about everybody in this series. I think if Curry goes crazy, LeBron will switch himself onto Curry. We've seen him do that with other, you know, it doesn't care about the position. If someone's starting to go off and it's a high stakes game, LeBron just decides he's going to guard him.
Right.
So you may see that. But the issue is that, you know, the Cavs just don't have, I mean, Kyrie Irving is a horrible defender when he's healthy, horrible, and he's not healthy. And so where do you hide him? You can't put him on Curry. That's a non-starter. You can't put him on Thompson because Thompson's 7 inches taller than him. You can't put him on Harrison Barnes. Barnes is 6'8". You gotta put Irving somewhere, and that's an issue. J.R. Smith has played better defense, but I don't know where you hide him either. It's just Cleveland's going to have to defend as a team. They're going to have to, you know, play out of their minds, and they're going to have to switch a lot just because the Warriors are so good, and they don't have anyone that you can just ignore. So it's a lot. I mean, it's about as different a matchup situation as you could possibly imagine with these two teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think offensively, Golden State's just got to make their shots, and defensively, just make the other guys on Cleveland have to make shots. Now, if you're Golden State, if you're Cleveland, and LeBron is getting double covered, and Golden State is putting forth, Steve Kerr is putting forth an offense that is keying in on LeBron, who do you see on Cleveland that can really step up? I know Kyrie Irving's an easy answer, but he is hurt. Name me somebody else in that offense that could step up for the Cavs if LeBron is having an off night.
Yeah, I mean, the first guy definitely has to be Irving. There's no question about that. Other than that, you're looking at really Shumpert and J.R. Smith. And Shumpert's kind of an interesting guy because he's shown the ability to get his own shot a little bit, but it's not usually an efficient shot. He's got like a nice little one dribble pull up that, you know, if things go bad and the Warriors are forcing the ball out of James's hands, maybe that's a shot he can get, especially single covered, because he's, mm-hmm. you know, nobody else on the Cavs is ever going to see a second body.
Right.
And if J.R. Smith, you know, we've seen him hit 8 threes in a playoff game, you know, that's a guy that I think it's for Cleveland to win this series. And I'm sure we'll get more in depth in the predictions and stuff later. But for them to be competitive, I really think Smith has to almost win them a game by himself with a ridiculous, you know, 7 or 8 3-point night. It's just that's how it's got to go. It's got to be one of those guys really stepping way out of, you know, what their normal level of play is to get mm-hmm. that done.
Right.
I mean, Ben, you have to say that Steve Kerr made a better decision, huh? Going to Golden State rather than the Knicks.
Wow. Dr. G's in the dirt-kicking mood tonight.
Yeah, why not?
None of us here like the Dolans anyway. So,
a little bit better decision. A little bit.
Is he coach of the year?
I think he should have been.
Yeah.
Budenholzer won it. The Hawks coach won it, but I think it should have been Kerr. I think Kerr, I mean.
I agree.
He took a team from good to great. And that's harder than taking a team from average to good, which is, I think, what Budenholzer did. So,
right.
You know, I mean, he did a good – Budenholzer did a fine job. He did a great job. The Hawks won 60 games. But, mm-hmm. you know, Kerr had, you know, much more to do.
Right. All right. Call it. I'll make my pick first. I like Warriors in 6.
This will not be interesting because I'm going Warriors in 5 or 6. I haven't really looked at all the numbers yet. 5 wouldn't surprise me, but just to give James a little credit, I think 6 is a very realistic number.
Does Cleveland come home down 2 games to none? Can they win one of these first 2 on the road?
You know, I don't think so. I think the Warriors have kind of they've had this habit all year where they know how good they are and they've sort of allowed teams to stick in games. And sometimes that's cost them very rarely because usually the Warriors can just turn it on for a quarter and win it
right.
after kind of messing around. But I keep hoping for this and I keep wanting to see this out of them because I think they're so good when they're at their best and to just come out hot, come out focused, stop turning the ball over, which has been a huge issue mm-hmm. and just take these first 2. They're totally capable. If they don't do it, it's going to be just because of the same, you know, mistakes and kind of half asleep play that they've shown occasionally. I just think they're capable. And I think now is the time. It's going to be impressed on them that they, you know, they got to take these first 2 and set the tone.
Mm. Dr. G?
I think I'm going to go. I like the Warriors. I'm going to go Warriors in 6. I think, you know, I got to give LeBron the benefit of the doubt. I think he alone is going to win one of these games for the Cavs, and then they'll pull out another game within the series. But I still just think that the Warriors are the better team. But I see where Grant's coming from, that maybe, you know, 5. I'm going to give LeBron even a little bit more respect and say he'll get 2.
I mean, if they don't win, I think if for this series to go at least 6, I think Cleveland has to split because, if Golden State wins the first 2, all I could see is if Cleveland wins the next 2 and the series tied at 2. But if they split, or Golden State goes up 2-0 and they split in Cleveland, I can't see the Warriors losing Game 5 at home. I agree with you, Grant, that if they dick around for 3 quarters and LeBron has a hot 4th quarter and they get caught with their pants down, perhaps. But if they win the first 2 in Oakland, I can't see them going into game five, not up 3-1.
Yeah, and I mean, the Warriors they don't lose at home. They just, I mean, all year they were the best home team. I think, I'll get the number wrong. I think they were 35-2 in the regular season or something crazy like that at home.
I shall take a look while we are talking. Quick news note, and of course you'll have a preview up, of course, and the rest of the great guys in your NBA department at BleacherReport.com. Let's see. Golden State was 39-2.
Yeah, there you go. 39-2.
Wow.
On the flip side, Cleveland was 22-19 on the road. So
there you go.
Not bad. Not great, but you know, above 500, can't argue with that.
Yeah.
So quick news note, and then I want to talk about the draft, and then I want to talk about this rankings that one of your guys on Bleacher Report did. Looks like an announcement's gonna come tomorrow in the Windy City. Fred Hoiberg will be leaving Ames. He'll be leaving Iowa State to become to replace Tom Thibodeau in Chicago. Before we talk about Fred Hoiberg, do you think in the general scope of things, Tom Thibodeau got screwed? I mean,
I think the way the Bulls handled it in a way that really was unfair to him, just because there were so many leaks and so many, you know, there was so much sniping and so much obvious, you know, and that press release when they fired him, I've never seen anything like that. I mean, just killing him. It was an attack, really.
Right.
So it was handled badly, but you know, I get it. I totally get why they didn't want him to coach anymore. I think, you know, now you're starting to hear that some of the players were, you know, not exactly happy with how hard he was driving him, that kind of thing. I just think a lot of the way that he coaches doesn't really fit with what some of the smarter teams are doing nowadays.
Well, let's see. What was his first year? 2011, 2012? I think that, right? Was this his fourth year or third year?
It was his fourth.
Okay, so 2011, 2012 is his first year. The Bulls went 50-16. They finished with the best record in the East. Of course, they ended up losing in the playoffs, and the Heat won the NBA title. 2012, 2013, another good year, 45-37. Of course, that was the first of what would be a myriad of Derrick Rose knee injuries. They finished fifth in the conference, which isn't bad, again, considering they didn't have their best player, and Miami went on to win the world title. Last year, 48-34, so top four again, but again, dealing with injuries, did not make it to the finals. The Heat did, and they of course lost to the Spurs. And this year, 50-32, and again a little bit from Derrick Rose. So when your best player has been on and off the court for the last four seasons, they consistently were a top four team in the conference and made it to the playoffs every year. So success wasn't the problem; it was more of a personality issue, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, it was just. The weird thing about lately in the NBA is success is definitely not a prerequisite for keeping your job. I mean, the Warriors fired Mark Jackson, took him to the playoffs twice in a row. George Karl won Coach of the Year a couple of years ago and got fired. I mean, like, so now what you're seeing is teams are deciding that, yeah, we're good, but we think we can be better if we do X, Y, and Z. And a lot of times X, Y, and Z is changing coaches.
Right. So, and I've watched a lot of Fred Hoiberg. I've seen him in the tournament. He's been pretty successful. I mean, he got bounced early this year in the tournament by UAB, but in a very tough conference, always having to deal with Bill Self's Jayhawks. My brother has always said, and he's one of our college basketball analysts here on Extra Point, that Fred Hoiberg is a pro coach. He's not meant for college coaching. He's meant for a bigger stage. How do you think he will translate in Chicago?
I think he'll do well, and for that reason. I think it's been so clear that he's just kind of – he was a college coach, but really he was just waiting for the right NBA job, and it seems like it's been that way for like 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the comparison you hear a lot is Brad Stevens, who jumped from Butler to the Celtics and has done a really good job, and everybody thinks, you know, this is a guy who's going to be a great coach for 30, 40 years. And you know, Hoiberg obviously – has a lot to prove, but you know, I think you're going to see a better offense out of the Bulls. I think you're going to see him be a little smarter and a little more flexible with how he manages minutes, that kind of thing. I think he's going to do great.
Okay. Also coming up in the month of June will be the NBA draft, which I think is that the Garden again? Or is it at Barclays? Was it Barclays last year?
They always stick it in New York somewhere.
Yeah, it's somewhere on this side of the country. Maybe one day it'll be on your end of things. It's actually in your building, Dr. G. It's at Barclays again. All right. Well, obviously, Minnesota got the number one pick, followed by my beloved Lakers, who this might be their best pick, you know, since probably Worthy in '82, in terms of where they are. I mean, even the Kobe pick was even lower than this. Well, they didn't even pick Kobe. The Hornets did. Obviously, the two guys that are discussed the most: Karl Anthony Towns, Jahlil Okafor. Who goes where?
Yeah, well, let me ask you a question. If you're the Lakers, and I think Karl Anthony Towns goes first, and I think he should. But if you're the Lakers, do you knee-jerk reaction and definitely go Okafor? And are you happy about that if they do that?
Yes. Yeah, I do. I think they need a presence in the middle again. I think they need somebody young. I don't think necessarily need a scoring guy, although I know Towns can shoot. But I think they need a presence underneath, and I think that's a guy that can help them. In that aspect, I think they can get shooters elsewhere as they lower their cap. I mean, obviously, they really can't do a major makeover until Kobe retires,
right?
Because there's just way too much money that's just punching everybody in the face in that franchise. And I love Kobe, I do, but his knees are like Joe Namath at this point. So, and his ankles for that matter. So there's not really a lot the Lakers can do for the next few years until Kobe's gone and that money vanishes. If they get, I'm happy with either. They may have to adjust their strategy over time. If they get Towns, well, they know they got a guy that could shoot. Maybe they try and work him as a power forward, as a four, and maybe, look at another five. Time will tell, but it's a win-win for me, I think. For the Lakers.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. I mean, when they jumped up and got that second pick, I kind of was like, well, you know, at least they're going to have the toughest decision made for them, because those are the two guys everybody's got at the top,
right?
And they'll just take the one that doesn't go number one. To me, though, I mean, Towns is just – I mean, the possibilities with Towns to me are just kind of mind-boggling, because I think ultimately he really can just play center. I think he can guard centers, and I think because of his shooting ability, this could be a guy you could put anywhere. I mean, you could stretch the floor out with your center shooting threes. I mean, that's a possibility, mm-hmm. which, like I said, that's what the NBA is doing. I mean, shooting at every position is now a must, and if you got a center that can shoot a little bit, mm-hmm. I mean, boy, that's something. I mean, Okafor is polished. Okafor can score. I think a Lakers offense that kind of needs a little more high percentage play can throw it into him and get some buckets. I think that's big. I just don't know if he's the kind of big guy you build around, because defensively he's got some issues. He's not, right. He's not real athletic. Mm-hmm. He's not a great rebounder. And I don't know how good a rim protector he is. Certainly not on Towns level. But yeah, I mean, I think the Lakers lucked out a little bit. At least, you know, maybe the next thing they ought to hope is that the Timberwolves go completely insane and skip Towns.
Mm. And the Lakers have a second pick. They have the 20. I mean, it's low, but they have the 27th pick as well. They got from the Rockets, clearly from the Dwight Howard deal. And there's a myriad of European and international players that the Knicks could waste their pick on, since they're pretty much good at sucking at drafting European guys. Who do the Sixers take three? Russell?
I think Russell's the pick, and I like that pick. I Moutier is the other guy you hear talked about potentially jumping up there, but I mean, do you want a guy that your latest information is from a Chinese league? Like how much, you know, information can you translate from that? I mean, he looks like he's going to be a player, but Russell to me is just so safe. I mean, he's long, he's a good shooter, he's smart, he's a smooth player. Like and the Sixers need a guy like that. I think he really is the obvious, easy pick for them there.
One more draft question, and then we will. And then I want to talk about this poll, this article. One guy that I like, and I saw him live last year as a junior, when Kentucky was here at Barclays to play Providence, is Willie Cauley-Stein. I think he's a fantastic player.
Yep.
How far does he go down? You think the Kings take him? You know, there's rumors they want to trade Cousins. I don't know what kind of lunatic team would take that psychopath. But look, Cousins is a great player, but he's got to get hit in the back of the head with a 2x4 to, you know, unscramble his brains, because he needs some wiring fixed. But he's a hell of a basketball player. At least ain't doubt about that.
No.
Where do you like Cauley-Stein? Does he go to the Kings at six? Does he drop even further? Nuggets take him at seven? Is he even a top 10?
Oh yeah, I think. To me, he's for sure a top 10. I think the Kings at six is a great – I mean, they'd be lucky to get a guy like him at six. I mean, depending on who you're listening to, you know, he's somewhere around he'd be the fourth best prospect in the draft. He might be the eighth. He might be the 12th. No way he gets out of the top 10 to me. Just no chance. Kings at six. I mean, Magic at five. The Magic at five should think about it. I'm not sold on, you know, there's a couple of European prospects you mentioned that if they make it past the Knicks, they're kind of right there in the top 10 range. Porzingis is an option. You know, a lot of guys have him in the top five. But yeah, Cauley Stein, I'm with you. I really like him a lot. Just athletic. I think defensively he's going to be great. Versatile, that kind of thing. So. Yeah. Kings would be lucky to get him.
Yeah. One guy I'm not a big fan of, and I watched him a lot in the tournament, is Justice Winslow. He always looks awkward on the offensive end. His feet never look planted right. He always looks a little clumsy. He could have got called for about 12 travels in that game in the national championship against Wisconsin. I mean, he was shuffling his feet all over the place. He's a guy that I would be very careful about drafting. I know he's very athletic. He's a good defender. But he looks like he has two left feet on the offensive end. I could see him dropping to maybe the Hornets at nine, possibly Miami at 10, but he worries me. What do you think about Winslow?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Knicks are going to look at him at four. The problem that I have with him is, and this is such a, you know, I hate to even rely on this, but I think he's kind of a tweener, and that's such a dirty word for prospects, especially as the NBA kind of gets out of, you know, we're seeing a lot more hybrid lineups, but I just don't know exactly what he is, which is fine. Cause he's, you know, what is he, 19 years old or what?
Right.
So we shouldn't know that yet, but I'm just not positive what he's going to be. And if I'm making a lottery pick, I'd like to have a better idea of that.
Hmm. All right. Before we let you go, one of your cohorts, Mr. I know he'd mentioned earlier, Frommel. I had a feeling that's what it was. Adam Frommel on Bleacher Report ranked the NBA championship teams of the modern era. Ranked them from 41-1. So going back all the way to, well, I guess it would be the 76 Suns or the 75 Warriors. I just want to give the top 15 because I'm curious. And Dr. G, I'm curious your thoughts too, because a lot of this is in your wheelhouse. This is just the top 15. Number 15, he had the 2004 Pistons, which was Chauncey Billups and Rip Hamilton. And I always thought that team kind of got a gift because the Lakers were a train wreck by the time they got to the finals. I mean, they got lucky on the big fish shot against the Spurs. I thought that the Rockets, the Pistons team, the following season, 2004-05, was better. And they lost that tough 7-game series to the Spurs. At number 14, the 2009 Lakers. That was the Laker team that beat Orlando. They were pretty good. Of course, that was the year that they got everything together after getting Paul Gasol the year before. And that was Kobe's first solo NBA title. At number 13, the 2013 Heat. The team that beat Oklahoma City in the finals. At number 12, the 85 Lakers. That was a Laker team that, after losing in 84, after twice having a chance to win that series, beat the Celtics finally in their history. And then, of course, one was the first team to ever win a clincher on the parquet floor. So that was particularly delicious for a Laker fan of 12 years old like myself. Number 11, Michael's last team, the 98 Bulls. All right, here was Adam's top 10. At number 10, the 92 Bulls, that was Michael's second team. That was the infamous hitting, nine threes in the first half. In game one, he gives that, he shrugs the shoulders against Portland. I like that Portland team, too. Number 9, the 08 Celtics, who, you know, obviously that was the one NBA title Kevin Garnett. That they got in the trade. Then, of course, they beat the Lakers in six, and they won that game six by, 39 points. I was very disappointed in the Lakers that night. At number 8, the 2001 Lakers. That was the team that where you first started seeing the Kobe-Shaq sparring, but then they went on to lose only one game in the playoffs and swept the Sixers. Well, no, they beat the Sixers in five. It was Sixers won game one, and I was kind of stunned. They beat them in game one at the Staples Center, which kind of threw me off. At number 7, last year's Spurs. Really? What do you think about that, Grant? He has last year's Spurs as a top 10 team of this era.
I think, first of all, Adam is a guy whose research skills are ridiculous.
I could tell. I could just tell by these. By this, please check this article. Check this piece out, everyone. I'm just giving you the teams, but he's got some incredible statistics here as well. So
I mean, he comes up with his own metrics. I mean, he does. He crunches the numbers, and I guarantee you, he's thought about this 10 times more than I have. But just objectively, I don't know if I've seen a team play prettier basketball than the Spurs played last year, and I don't know if I've been more blown away by just how tied together and how aesthetically awesome a team looked than the Spurs last year. I mean, they made the Heat look like they weren't even there. They were unbelievable. They reached a real peak. So I'm totally fine with that. I mean, I'd certainly rather watch them than the 97 Bulls or the 99 Spurs that he's got ranked ahead of them.
Mm. Yes, as Grant mentioned, at number six, the 97 Bulls, that was the second of the three in the second triple. That was the first year they beat the Jazz. That was the flu game when Michael scored 38 while he was up chucking in a bucket every time out. Number five, the 99 Spurs. That's a tough team because, you know, that was the strike year. The season started in January. That's kind of tough. And I even tell my brother, that's a tough team to rank. You know, you're happy for the Admiral, but, I mean, they were playing an eighth-seeded Knicks team. So it's kind of... I think the best Spur team I ever saw was the two in the middle, the 03 team that beat the Nets and the 05 team that beat the Pistons. I thought those were the two best Spurs teams. At number four, the 86 Celtics. That was the Celtic team that went 40-1 at home. Trivia question, Mr. Hughes. Can you name the one team that beat the Celtics on the parquet that year?
Oh, God, absolutely not.
Dr. G, do you remember?
I don't.
Portland Trailblazers.
How about that?
Convincingly beat him by 18, I think.
Cross-country flight and everything.
Yeah, there you go. At number three, and here they are, Mr. Hughes, the 87 Lakers. I love this. This might be my favorite Laker team of all time. 65 wins. They lost one game en route to the finals, and that was a game that it took Sleepy Floyd to score 27 points in the fourth quarter against them for Golden State. I love that team. Number two, Michael's first winner, the 91 Bulls. And I watched them. They kind of showed how old my Laker team was. And obviously number one, you don't even need research to figure this out. And that is, of course, the 72-10 1996 Chicago Bulls. You know, it was a really good team, and it kind of sucks they were just wrong place, wrong time. Those Supersonics.
Yep.
In 96, they were really good.
Yeah.
And they were just wrong team. I think any other year they might have beat a Bulls team. They just couldn't beat. No one was going to beat that Bulls team.
Oh no, I think that's totally right. If you look, there's some. If you look at like margin of victory, which I think is usually a better way to measure how good a team is than win loss record. There's a 94-95 Sonics, one of the best teams ever in terms. They won games by over 8 points a game that year in the regular season, and they didn't win a title, obviously. But one of the best regular seasons to ever not win a title.
Right. Yeah. Those. Sonics teams in the mid 90s were really good, and they were just a victim of circumstance, and they were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. The East just had better teams. Kind of a bummer. So there's the countdown. So check out Adam's column and check out everybody on Bleacher Report. Mr. Hughes, when is your next? I'm taking you will be doing a finals preview, or what is next? What do you have up right now, and what do you got coming up this week?
Oh, let's see. Today I had a couple things come out today, looking at what the best move for Tom Thibodeau is after getting fired, and I think it's going to be to sit out a year.
I agree.
Just because there's not any good jobs left, and he could probably use some time off.
Yeah, no kidding.
So yeah, I did that today, and I put up something else that I think will run mostly tomorrow, but a good program to really get out there tomorrow, but. It's up now, asking if LeBron James or Steph Curry is under more pressure in the finals this year.
That's pretty good. That's a great question, actually. I think it depends on your point of view.
Yep. That's a teaser. Go read it.
Definitely. No answers here. Grant, thank you very much. And we'll have you back on probably in a few weeks. Maybe we'll talk more about the draft and see what some of the teams do in the offseason. But Grant Hughes, everybody. BleacherReport.com. Check out all of his stuff and all the other. They do great baseball, hockey. There's a front page piece on the Women's World Cup. And, of course, you get your wrestling fix there, too. So Thank you, Grant, very much. We'll talk to you in a few weeks. Dr. G.
Yes, sir.
How you doing over there?
I'm doing well.
Well, we are done. Another great episode of The Extra Point in the books. We'll be back in a couple weeks, probably on a Monday again, because based on our, you know, two-week cycle, it's the night after Money in the Bank. So we'll be back with that Monday night. We will have Joel Barnhart to join us, talk more Major League Baseball, and we'll see how Cavs Warriors are doing and Blackhawks. And
you know what else happened on your birthday? Back in 1992?
June 1st, 1992. June 1st, 1992. The Miracle Violence Connection wrestled their first match in Japan.
Derek Jeter was drafted 6th overall today.
Good grief. For Grant Hughes and the doctor, I'm Scott. I guess you kicked any extra points you may like. Arena football, always nice. Enjoy the NBA Finals. Enjoy the Stanley Cup Finals. Enjoy everything sports. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
See you.